Well, good morning. Or to those who didn't change the clocks and are probably watching it on the catch-up later, good afternoon or maybe good evening to you. Well, I'd like to thank those who have taken part so far, Simon Garfunkel and Joan Baez. Or was that Greek singer that you look a bit... Nana School, that's the one, yeah. I was impressed with Simon's ability to play two instruments at the same time, though. Maybe next time, or maybe for the encore, he can do a mouth organ and a tambourine as well. So that's so well done. Well, last time I was here, since last time I was here, I've been travelling a little bit. I was down in London last week, and then also up in Glasgow. And it's quite an eye-opener up there in Glasgow. I was speaking to somebody and I was asking them, I said, in Liverpool, there's great rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester. What's it like between Glasgow and Edinburgh? And he said, well, when I lived in Edinburgh, I wasn't really conscious of it, but when I moved to Glasgow, there was great rivalry. He goes, I did hear that somebody said, I think it's probably a local gag, he said that the only good, this is somebody from Edinburgh said, the only good thing to come out of Glasgow is the Edinburgh train. Which I thought was a bit harsh, really, wasn't it? A bit harsh, that really. So apologies to anybody from Glasgow. I was also given a little gift there, which was a Glasgow Bible. Unfortunately, I haven't got the gift of tongues or interpretation, so I can't understand. So if you have connections there, would like that, happily give that to you, and maybe you can interpret it to us. Well, we... As Louis said, we're just carrying on this little mini-series of mission and what it means and what we're to be like. Salt, light, and this... the last one in this series is the example. And we are, in a way, this morning, sitting in a classroom, and Jesus is going to give us a lesson. And often the best lessons are... show and tell. Often do that at Christmas, don't we? Children come up with their presents, they show us what they've got, and they tell us how it works and what they're going to do, it, why they like it, and all that sort of stuff. So that's what we're looking at this morning. That's what we've already read. But Jesus, first of all, shows, and then he tells us what that means, but also how that impacts our lives too. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be morbid about it, but if you knew that you didn't have long to live, and you had to say or to speak to people, share some of your wisdom, instruction for now and for future generations, what would you say to people? It's quite a challenge, isn't it? What would you say? What's the most important thing you'd say? The end of John's Gospel, we're told that if all the things that Jesus did and said were recorded, there wouldn't be enough libraries to contain the books of all those accounts. He said a lot of stuff. We've only got a little bit of a snippet in the Gospels. And he did amazing things. His actions, his miracles, and so many things that are unrecorded. But in the reading that... my glamorous wife read for us, it told us there that Jesus' hour had come. The time when he was going to leave this earth through death, crucifixion and death, and go home to be with his Father was just about now. And so this was his, in a way, his final lesson. His final sermon. There were cries from the cross. There were messages he gave to his mother and to John. But in a sort of a gathering sense, this was the final one. So I wonder if you were in that situation, what would you do? Well, that's what we're going to just consider and look at this morning. And the first thing, the lesson that Jesus is going to actually give us is about servanthood, service, and humility. It'd be nice when it's just maybe think of something more glamorous than that, you know, miracles and all the great, you know, phenomena and various things going to happen. But he brings all of that, all of those books that John says that couldn't contain his actions, down to this final lesson about servanthood, humility, and service. And so if the world is going to be convinced about Jesus Christ, it's going to be seen in these elements. And so he's going to start off by looking at... I don't switch it on yet. No, it's a bit early, but thank you. but it is where Jesus sets out an example. Now, a few weeks ago, I sat down there. I think it was Noah, my grandson. He's one of these that run around afterwards and do swings and, you know, gymnastics and all the rest of it. And he got this little leaflet about the church weekend. So apologies, it's the same one he used. Apologies whoever printed this. But he gets it like this, and he looks up there and he says, "I can see God. I can see God." I didn't know who or what he was looking at. It could have been you, but he was actually looking at the window, and for him, that's how he interpreted that. Now, of course, we know that we can't see God in his fullness, can we? But the world needs to see God, and the world needs to hear about God, and we see him through Jesus Christ, don't we? And of course, it's a great place to come, isn't it, to church, to have that experience. And so Jesus says in verse 15, he said, I've set before you an example. He is in this gathering that's in the Passover, and there's many things we could perhaps just reflect on this, but just to give some of the key points about this Passover, it was a custom that the Jews, they fulfilled time and time again. And they had gathered there together. Jesus, in fact, a couple of days before, had sent two disciples to find a man who was carrying a pitcher of water and said that the master has need of the guest room where this supper would take place, so make sure it's prepared. And so they go and have this meal. And halfway through the meal, they've been eating there. Jesus gets up and he does something in a way quite remarkable, because don't forget, he's the master, he's the teacher, he's Jesus, he's the king. He gets the bowl and the towel that was by the door that all 12 of the disciples had walked past. Each one of them had walked past that bowl and that towel. And the custom was that if you entered into someone's house, particularly to celebrate the Passover, there would be a servant in the house who would actually wash your feet. If there wasn't a servant, that you would wash each other's feet. They knew that. But they probably looked at the bowl. I'm not going to do that. That's not for me. I'm not going to take the place of the servant. And they all knew that, and they walked past. 1, 2, 3, 11, 12 of them. And they sat and they had the meal without washing. And so Jesus gets up the meal and he takes the bowl and he washes their feet and he dries their feet. And he gives them this visual example that I have come to serve, not to be served. It's a powerful, I'm sure they were embarrassed to the core of that. And so Jesus said, I've come to set you an example. I'm showing you how to live, what to do. Luke 22 tells us a little bit more detail that in this meeting, strange enough, the conversation wasn't about servanthood. The conversation was about greatness. Who's the greatest of us all? Who's going to sit on your right and your left? That's what they were preoccupied with. Jesus said, it's not about that. In the kingdom of God, it's upside down. It's an upside down kingdom where the first will be the last. The least will be the greatest. And so Jesus is showing here that we know he was the greatest and he stoops down. Philippians 2 tells about the humility of Jesus taking the place of a servant, even unto death. And he takes that lowest place and he's willing to serve them, do the work of a servant. Well, then the second part of the lesson is it's all going very well. Maybe the God, isn't this fantastic? Isn't our leader very humble? But the punchline comes, probably the uncomfortable bit is, where Jesus says to them, "You see what I've just done? The show? Well, I want you to do the same." So this is part of the lesson. Now, I'm sure you're all too young to remember a TV program called The Generation Game. Louise wouldn't have known it. She'd have been studying night and long prayers on a Saturday evening. You know, we wouldn't be watching light entertainment. And the Christians wouldn't be doing that sort of thing. But anyway, I'll tell you about it because you won't have watched it. But they'd have a little incident there where somebody would come on, they'd do something. I can remember, for example, doing pottery. So somebody comes on, got the potter's wheel there, and they're spinning the wheel, and they're making something beautiful and all the rest, and it's fantastic. They're experts. And so they say, yeah, that's all you need to do. Keep your hands wet, keep the clay wet, etc. And then it's over to you. And boy, what a fine mess most people made of that. It was all over the place. And that's the part of the lesson now that Jesus is saying. He invented the generation game. It wasn't Bruce Forsyth. And so he's saying, now you need to do what I have just shown you. And that's a challenge, isn't it? These are the last words of Jesus before he goes to Calvary, before he lays down his life. And he's saying, really, if we want to win the world, it's going to be at this level of service, of servanthood. And you can be no more Christ-like than in this area of your experience and of your life. We don't need any more chiefs or leaders. We just need people who will humbly serve God. And those people that Louise and all of us talked about before, those mothers who guided us and nurtured us, were probably unsung heroes of the faith. Probably never came out to the front, but at the back and in personal life, humbly serving people. And that's what Jesus is teaching us here. I can remember a number of years ago, being at the Keswick Convention, and I first went there in the mid-70s, and the man who was doing the Bible readings at that time was a man called John Stott, and a wonderful preacher, author, and wonderful man of God, greatly used by God throughout the whole of the world. Come across any of his books, particularly The Cross of Christ in the run-up to Easter. Get it, read it, you'll be blessed. And he certainly blessed me that week. I can always remember him saying, he'd come to our campsite and he said, oh, he talked about various things, about the Bible and his life, and he said, I must go now. He said, I've got to have a Triple H. Wasn't sure that was an Australian drink or whatever it was, but anyway, it was a horizontal half hour, a little kip, a little siesta. Now, I think it was rather cruel that on Mother's Day we lost an hour's sleep, so I think all mothers this afternoon should get a Triple H, or maybe a double Triple H to get that hour back. But that's not what I want to tell you about John Stott. This is what he said many years ago, and his last ever message, his last ever sermon that he preached. And he's taken all his experience of all the years throughout the country and the world. And he said that as a young Christian, as my friend said, we ask the question, what is the purpose of being a Christian? Yes, we're saved and we have a new life, etc. But ultimately, beyond that, what's our purpose? And he said, after all these years and now approaching my death, because he knew he didn't have long to live, he said these words. He said that God wants his people to become like Christ. Christ's likeness is the will of God for the people of God. That's our purpose, that we are to be like Christ. And that's what Jesus is saying here. I've shown you the way, now I want you to do that. And I want you to show the world Jesus. Jesus is the answer for the world today, yesterday, and tomorrow. They need to hear Jesus more than anything else today. We don't want to get heavily involved in political arguments, economic issues, or whatever it may be. The world today, whichever continent we think of, needs Jesus. They need to hear him. They need to see him. And they need to know him. I remember a number of years ago, I was going to a meeting in Essex, and I got there early, and I was going just around a church that had this graveyard, always a good place to kill a few minutes, and reading the inscriptions on the headstones. And I came across this particular headstone. There were these two ladies' names that were on it. I'm not sure they were nurses or something that had been killed in the war, and it gave their names, the date of birth, etc., and it says, this little inscription, through whom we saw Jesus. Through whom we saw Jesus. And I thought, you know, I'd love to have met those ladies. That's our purpose, Christ likeness. Remember years ago hearing somebody, or reading about somebody, said, how many gospels are there? How many gospels are there? Of course, that'd be four. And his name was Gypsy Smith. He was an evangelist of a different era. So no, he said there are five gospels. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and you. You. And most people don't read the first four. They read you. So we need to be like Christ. I also just wanted to mention this because it's a great little statement that Jesus puts in here amongst all of this. Because as he's washing their feet, Peter doesn't quite get it. Most of the disciples don't quite get it. And this statement, like the washing of the feet, goes beyond just the simple washing of the feet. But Jesus says to them that you don't realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. And isn't that a wonderful little statement about lots of things in life? Maybe you're going through sickness, sorrow, bereavement, and you don't understand. You don't realize what's God doing. Maybe you're having problems with a house sale or a move or a job or final. Something's happening. It doesn't seem right. And these words maybe be the comfort that we need today. God, we don't know what you're doing. But I trust you that there is a bigger picture there. And you're doing something great. This bit I'm not quite sure about. And Jesus says, you know, you don't have to always understand it then. You don't always have to maybe agree with it, but just to simply accept and rest in faith what Jesus is doing. So that's it really. And what I just wanted to leave you with, because you may be thinking, that's all great, Rob, but you know, it's very hard to be like Jesus. And I couldn't do those things. Well, William Temple, for all the things that he did, was one of the archbishops of Canterbury. And he wrote these words many years ago. Well, I thought it was quite helpful just to reflect on this. And he said, it is no good... giving me a play like Hamlet or King Lear and telling me to write a play like that. Shakespeare could do it. I can't. And it's no good showing me a life like the life of Jesus and telling me to live a life like that. Jesus could do it. I can't. But if the genius of Shakespeare could come and live in me, then I could write plays like this. And if the Spirit, the Holy Spirit of God, the Comforter, the Paraclete, could come into me, then I could live a life like his. Philippians 4 reminds us, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.